Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. So, one last session of Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. I've got about halfway through the health seminar, and then we switched over to the prasadam one, and there's still a fair bit to do on that one too. So I'm going to ask everybody which one you want me to do, either the health or the prasadam. Everybody in favor of health. Oh, it's going to be close. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Prasadam. I think the health addicts have it. Okay, so we'll continue on with the health. If we finish that one, we can switch over to the prasadam one also. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to skip a little bit of the health one so that we can jump ahead to the Prabhupada's concerns about the devotee's health. Because we'd already talked a little bit about how Prabhupada dealt with his own health issues. And they were very major. We talked about the problems that he had with his kidneys. He used to have heart palpitations. We talked also about his teeth and the constant problems, you know, with his teeth just basically being rotten and wanting to fall out. And there were several other issues, of course, with just Prabhupada's inability to digest properly. So that was always an ongoing problem. And, of course, that meant that he would always have mucus problems, air problems like this, all of which, you know, can severely disrupt the body. So now we'll look at a little bit. I'm just trying to find a section here. Just the other thing, of course, was that Prabhupada was just old. I mean, his body was getting old. At least when I was traveling with him, 1976, 77, then, of course, it was increasingly the signs were coming there about Prabhupada's debilitation of old age coming in. I'm just excuse me a second. I'm just lost my place here. Here we go. So anyway, there were some, you know, very serious signs that were coming up. Because when I first saw Prabhupada in 1972 in Australia, Prabhupada was already talking about the fact that he was old and that he could go at any time, and it was well known. I mean, he repeated that hundreds of times, mainly to urge his disciples to get serious, learn Krishna consciousness, because they would have to take it up after his departure. So he was very much conscious of the fact that he had a very limited amount of time to spread Krishna consciousness and a very huge amount of work to do it. So somewhere or another, anyway, we were fortunate. Prabhupada was with us for at least 11 years, very actively preaching. But in 76, and especially in the latter part of 1976, I started to note, you know, some increasing signs of weakness in Prabhupada due to his, you know, ailing and aging bodily condition. So one of these symptoms Prabhupada expressed himself, because he didn't very often complain about being sick. Only when it was really extreme he would mention it. Otherwise he would just tolerate it. So this is on September the 11th, 1976. Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. And his health was not very good. He's been suffering from high blood pressure for several days. Today he has toothache. Indeed, he seems to be suffering a general decline in health and strength. At this time last year, he was striding strongly down the road every day for at least 1 hour and seemed to be full of vigor. Now he rarely takes such walks. So when Prabhupada had come to Vrindavan for the Janmashtami festival in 75, he was going out every morning, and, you know, Prabhupada would really set a pace when he went on his morning walks. We were young, but we'd have to, you know, kind of practically jog up sometimes just to keep up with him. So he was quite strong. Now, just a year later, he was practically, his morning walks were becoming almost a rare occurrence. Or even if he did go out, you know, very often, he was just circumambulating the temple. But he wasn't going out for his long walks anymore. So last December, that means 1975, when he once rose up from his desk, radiant with youthful energy, he declared, "I am not an old man. I will never grow old." Now, just the other day, so this is September, the following September, as I followed him up the staircase to go up onto the roof, so there's an enclosed staircase at the back of Prabhupada's quarters in Vrindavan. You go up. So I went up behind him. I watched him as he strained to get up to the top, pushing himself up the last few steps with his cane. He paused for a moment on the top step to rest, and half turning to me with a smile, he said, "Now I am old." So, Harikesh Maharaj has also been noting the gradual change in Prabhupada's physical condition. He came during massage one day and watched as I kneaded Prabhupada's arms and biceps. Seeing his soft flesh and muscle give easily under the pressure of my fingers, Harikesh shook his head and he said to me in sympathetic lamentation, "You don't understand. Just a year or two ago, those muscles were firm and tight." Prabhupada just left. He didn't say anything. So anyway, then there were some more specific things that occurred in early 1977. On the 25th of January, we had gone to Jagannath Puri. That was an interesting and a very ecstatic trip, actually, because Prabhupada had said that he would not go to Jagannath Puri until his disciples were allowed into the big temple there. And I think the last time that he'd been to Puri was in 1958, almost 20 years before. When we got to Bhubaneswar, where Gaur-Govinda Maharaj was living in a little thatched cottage on a barren piece of land, then, because Prabhupada had gone there to do the foundation stone ceremony, on Nityananda Prabhu's appearance there, which was February the 2nd. So we got there, I think, about January the 19th, like that. So we had about 2 weeks there. So when we got there, we saw the land, and he'd only just got electricity on, I think, a couple of days before. He'd been living there, you know, by himself practically, and, you know, just handwriting, you know, translating Prabhupada's books. And he used to write to Prabhupada sometimes, lamenting how, you know, he had no money and he had no man. And, you know, Prabhupada would write back and just encourage him to continue on with this translation work. Anyway, he got this plot of land donated. And it was almost on the outside of Bhubaneswar at that time. It was kind of right on the outskirts. But it was on the National Highway number 5. That went down from Calcutta all the way down to Madras. So he had this plot of land, but it was just barren. It was just like this red soil. And there was almost nothing growing on it at all for miles. The whole thing, there was just one big banyan tree, not on our land, but, you know, some distance behind it, which the locals used to go and worship every day because they thought that it was inhabited by a Brahma Rakshasa. So that was the kind of scene. No facilities there at all. So when we got there, everybody was really kind of doubtful, you know, whether we should even bother building a temple in Bhubaneswar. Because Jagannath Puri was just down the road, 1 hour. You know, it's one of the main dhams. And so nobody could really understand why, you know, we were doing something in Bhubaneswar. Only Prabhupada was enthusiastic, and Gaur-Govinda Maharaj, of course, because he was living there. But everybody else was kind of, you know, maybe we should look at Jagannath Puri. So Gaga Muni came, and he had informed Prabhupada that actually he had been to Puri and he had found two or three vacant plots. There was some land actually that was being offered to us by the government in Puri at that time as well. But it wasn't, you know, very close to the city, and it was kind of just scrubby land. But Gaga Muni said he had found some other places and some houses also that were, you know, had potential to be used as an ISKCON center. So under some persuasion then Prabhupada, you know, agreed, all right, let's go to Jagannath Puri and we'll see what we can do. He said, if we may not get into the big temple, but if we can build our own temple, then that will be fine. So on the 25th of January, we headed out to Jagannath Puri. So we went early in the morning. It took about an hour to get there. First, we went to a house where Gaga Muni had been, which Gaga Muni had been observing. It was a large building on a beachfront plot of land, but it was very deteriorated from the weather. Nearby, he also showed us a house where he had stayed once before, which belongs to a life member. And he suggested that in the future, Srila Prabhupada could also come and stay there. So it was right on the beach. So being close to the beach, Prabhupada decided to walk along the seashore. As he walked, he pointed to the waves, and he recalled how in 1920, he had been present here in this same area and had been jumping in the waves. He said, I was jumping very jubilantly. So he said, now I'm the same person, but due to the change of body, I'm walking with this cane. So he gave this as proof that life is different from the body. So then the next day, we stayed. Well, actually, we'd only gone there for one day. That was the intention. Gaga Muni had rented a room in tourist bungalow number one, which was right on the seashore. And, you know, we stayed there for the daytime. I get Prabhupada his massage. Nanda Kumar, who was still a sannyasi at that time, he had just come back from Africa, so he was cooking for Prabhupada. Sasarup Maharaj was the secretary. Pradyumna Prabhu was there. And there was a whole host of Namhata boys there. Were you there, Banu? Banu Bhatta was there. And Guru Kripa was there, of course. Gaga Muni. Bhagavat was there from Bhubaneswar. So there was, you know, quite a gathering there anyway. And in the afternoon, this man came from the Jagannath Puri temple. And he was one of the pujaris. So somehow or another, he had some contact with our ISKCON devotees. And he was very favorable. And he heard that Prabhupada was in town. So he came to see him because he had a motive. Next day, he was having an inauguration of a book or some Bhagavat that had been translated into Aryan language. So he wanted Prabhupada to attend his pandal as the chief guest. He figured naturally if the foreigners are there, then it'll attract more people and give it more importance. So Prabhupada agreed. So I went back on the regular bus to Bhubaneswar, gathered up Prabhupada's things, came back again, and Prabhupada stayed overnight. Next morning, we had a very ecstatic bathing pastime in the seashore there with Srila Prabhupada about 11 o'clock in the morning. Prabhupada took his massage and lunch early. But about 11 o'clock in the morning, he just had his massage on the balcony. It was overlooking the sea. And Prabhupada was looking out. And he called me over. He said, what do you think? Shall I bathe in the sea? So we were naturally very, you know, excited about that prospect. So I said, oh, yeah, you know, they say that bathing in the sea is very good for the digestion. I was trying to, you know, give some good reasons why Prabhupada should do it. So Prabhupada, you know, he smiled, tipped his head. He said, all right, let's go. So he wrapped his towel around him. And down we went. There was only like 50 meters practically to the seashore. And when we got down there, all the Namhata boys were already in the ocean, you know, body surfing and playing around. And nobody really kind of realized that Prabhupada was there just for a minute or so. And Prabhupada came down, he stood by the seashore, you know, dropped off his towel, he had his gumsha on. And then, you know, I kind of held him as he came down to the edge of the water. And in Puri, actually, the waves come in quite strongly, or they can do. So it was kind of swirling in, coming up to his knees. and then swirling back out again, you know, down to his ankles. So I had to hold Prabhupada just to steady him, because, you know, when the waves come in and out, the sand moves. So I held on to him, and Prabhupada was laughing, you know, he really liked it. So he just stood there at the edge there. And then as the water came in, he started reaching down and scooping up water and just rubbing it on his body. So then I thought, well, you know, he can't reach the back. So I started scooping up water and rubbing it on his back, you know, to get the oil off. So then when I started doing that, by this time, all the wood had gone out. You know, Prabhupada's at the ocean. So all the Naumata boys, they all came around and they were gathered around in a circle. And as we, you know, I started bathing and then Bhagwat and Guru Kripa, and then everybody got in on it. And so everybody started splashing Prabhupada with, you know, with the water. And Prabhupada was really enjoying it. I have to say, he didn't get a proper bath. But it was just a pastime. It was just for the fun of it, really. And at one point, you know, Prabhupada reached down, he scooped some water up, and he swilled his mouth out with it. So as he spat the water out, Guru Kripa was in front. He realized what was going to happen, and he just suddenly, his hand shot out. He caught the water that Prabhupada spat out, and then he immediately drank it. So it was really nice. And everybody, they all started chanting, I think, the Brahma Samhita, yeah? Yeah, everybody was chanting the Brahma Samhita, so it became like a full-on Abhishek. So anyway, it was about 10 minutes, not long. And as I say, Prabhupada really didn't get a good bath, but he enjoyed it. That was the main thing. And we also were in ecstasy just to have that chance. Anyway, so then in the afternoon, we had to go to this pandal. And it was some place a little bit further out from the main city area. Like sandy, barren kind of area. And there was some small pandal, and a little stage was set up. And there were about 20 or 30 of these pujaris and pandas from the local temples there. So this man was there, Sadashiva Rut, and he had his book. So Prabhupada came, and then he invited him up on the stage. All the other devotees sat down in front, facing. And then Prabhupada was asked to speak. So he was given the book. He was said, you know, now if you can say something about this book, that would be very nice. So Prabhupada looked at it and put it down, and then he gave this nice 20-25 minute lecture about how, you know, all the devotees, he said, Lord Jagannath, he means, you know, Jagannath, he's the Lord of the universe. So don't reduce him and make him a Riyanat or Purinat like this. He said he's the Jagannath. So he said if all the people of the Jagat want to come and see him, then why should you stop them? He said you must let them in. So he gave this long lecture of getting on their case, really, about why the foreign devotees are not allowed into the Jagannath Puri temple. And as he was speaking, some of the men at the back actually got up and walked off. They really didn't like what he was saying. And about halfway through, there was a very small temple to one side. And all of a sudden, they started clanging bells and, you know, banging gongs and like this. I don't know whether it was on purpose to disrupt the Prabhupada's talk or not. But anyway, it was going on. Then at the end, then Prabhupada stopped. So I was sat down in front of him, facing him. Prabhupada looked at me. He said, so, you know, shall we go? I said, okay, sure. So we started getting up. And then, you know, Sadashiva Rat, he said, the book. You have to inaugurate the book. Prabhupada hadn't even mentioned it. So Prabhupada picked it up. He said, oh, okay. He said, so this is the book of so-and-so. They, you know, they say it's a translation of the Bhagavat like this. He said, so today is inaugurated. And that was it. He put it down. So that, anyway, it was nice. So from there, then we went to just right next door. There was one of the Gaudiya mats, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. So then we went there. To that Gaudiya mat. And we had to climb up some steep steps. So we had to actually get a chair and carry Prabhupada up the steps. Then when we got there, the whole place was deserted. It was just after nightfall. And one little 25-watt bulb, you know, was illuminating the deities. No garlands, nobody around, nothing going on at all. So we had a big kirtan. So that kind of attracted the Mahant, whoever the devotees that were looking after the place. They came out, they put more lights on. We had a big kirtan for about 20 minutes. It was like a Guru Kripa Wampa Stomper. And then from there, then Prabhupada decided to go and visit one of his godbrothers who was in another Gaudiya Mat. So after about 20 minutes, we returned to the car and Prabhupada had us drive to the Purushottama Gaudiya Mat, where his friend Dr. Sharma Sunda lives. So Dr. Sharma Sunda, he was very nice. Sometimes he would, two or three times, he sent a letter to Prabhupada and he would include always some grains of rice, Jagannath Prasad, and Prabhupada would eat those. So when we got there, the place was practically deserted, and we noted again that the deity had no garlands. Then Prabhupada sat for some time on a gaddi on the floor of the kirtan hall in front of the temple, and all the devotees sat and had kirtan again. So their system is that they have a temple, which is really just the deity room, and then a little separated from that in front, then there's usually this Nat Mandir or, this kirtan hall. So we were sitting in the kirtan hall. It wasn't a very big place, maybe, as big as this temple room. And Prabhupada was sitting down on the floor on a cotton gaddi. So then at the end of the kirtan, when Prabhupada decided to leave, he uncrossed his legs and he placed his feet flat on the ground. Then he started to raise himself up using his stick as a support. So he kind of got into a squatting position. Then he put his stick in front of him, and with both hands he grabbed the cane and he started to haul himself up to his feet. So suddenly when he was about halfway up, he hesitated, and then simply within a second he fell back down onto the mat, kind of back onto a sitting position. It was a great surprise for us, and yet another sign that Prabhupada's health is very quickly dwindling away. I had to lift Prabhupada from underneath the armpits into a standing position, and Prabhupada walked out to his car without any comment. So I was watching him as he was going up, and I was thinking, well, maybe I should kind of lift him up. Then I was thinking, no, Prabhupada likes to do things. I mean, he was very self-sufficient, so he usually liked to do things himself. Then, bang, he just dropped down again onto the mat. So I was very surprised. So at that point, I made a vow that, I would watch out for this kind of thing in the future, especially going up steps because of the comment that he made in Vrindavan, and now because of even just raising himself up onto his feet was difficult. So after doing the foundation stone ceremony in Bhubaneswar, Prabhupada returned to Calcutta, and then from there we went out to Mayapur. So on February the 8th, 1977 then, Prabhupada was in Mayapur and it was the appearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Early this morning, Prabhupada rang me and when I went in, he was looking very drawn. He asked me for a glass of sugar candy water and I asked him how he was feeling and he simply replied, very bad. When I asked the cause, he said, it is a disturbance of Pitta Vayu, bile and air. So, then after taking the water and his medicine, Yogendra Ras, which is not taken for quite a few months, he began to feel much better and he came out at 6:30 a.m. and had his walk. So then a couple of days later on February the 10th, at 6:30 a.m. we drove around to the ferry at Mahesh Ganj to go to the mutt of Prabhupada's godbrother Sridhar Swami in Nabadweep. After a short while, we drove onto the ferry and crossed the Ganges and then drove through Nabadweep to his temple. Prabhupada, Jayapataka, Bhavananda, Satsvarupa, and myself all went, and as also Prajumna and his son, a couple of American disciples, and two Bengali devotees, Subhag and Prabhas, also made their own way there. When we entered the temple, Sridhar Maharaj came down from his room on the roof, and he greeted Srila Prabhupada very warmly, and they embraced each other and garlanded each other. Prabhupada offered his obeisances to the deities, and then everybody went up onto the roof. The steps leading up there were quite steep and large, But Prabhupada refused the chair to sit in so that we could carry him up, and instead he climbed up by himself. So Sridhar Maharaj went ahead, Prabhupada went up after him. So mindful of his weakness in Puri, I followed very closely behind him with my arms out in front, just underneath his armpits, just in case he had any problem. He was all right climbing the steps, one at a time, up until the last step, when he then hesitated, but just managed to push himself up with his cane. Then we rounded the corner and walked across the roof. In the middle, it is separated by a low wall, and there were another three steps on either side to get up and over and down again. It's like a stile. You go up and through and then down. So these were larger, about 9 inches or a foot high each. The Prabhupada didn't say anything, but he simply carried on walking towards them, and then he mounted the first step. He succeeded in climbing that one, but then on the next one, there was almost a disaster. With his right foot on the second step and his left foot still on the first one, he got halfway up. So he had one foot behind him, and he put one foot ahead, and then he was pushing on his cane to bring his back foot up. So as his weight shifted fully onto his right leg, which was in front, and he pushed on his cane, he suddenly collapsed. His legs just completely gave way, and I caught him under the armpits, holding his full weight. And then, keeping him upright, I lifted him up over the next two steps. He stepped down by himself over the other side, and without saying a word, he proceeded on to Sridhar Maharaj's room. So practically speaking, his strength is now almost gone. So Prabhupada didn't say a word. I mean, I literally caught him and just lifted him up. He didn't even look behind. He didn't say thank you or anything. He just carried on walking. But as I was walking behind him, I just felt that he was very happy and satisfied that I'd been there and, you know, caught him, and that he didn't have to worry about, you know, any problems. So, but still, anyway, you know, that was his situation. So a few days later, February the 15th, then as I massaged Prabhupada on the roof, he told me, "In all my life, I have never felt such weakness as I do now." So it's significant. In his whole life, he'd never felt like that. So I'm thinking more and more now that Prabhupada's health will not improve. Not that if Krishna desires, it couldn't happen. But now there is not such a necessity for him to travel. And the extraordinary strength and energy he has displayed in the last 10 years is not really required now. Prabhupada is always pleased to think that at least in America, everything is going on nicely without his personal presence. And when he toured in the summer, he told me that he had simply wanted to tour to become enthused by seeing how his disciples were managing everything themselves. So he was coming for his own enthusiasm, because, you know, his coming meant our enthusiasm as well. But in other words, he didn't come because there was anything really for him to do. He knew that things were going on quite nicely. So as he has said at different times, he has laid the foundation, planted the seed, set the fire, and administered the poison. That was all phrases Prabhupada used about his, you know, work of injecting Krishna consciousness into the Western cultures. So he is now confident that things will go on. So it occurred to me that actually this may be a change in Prabhupada's leela. I just got a very strong feeling about it. Another incident that indicated that also was the arrival of Tamal Krishna Maharaj just about at that time. He had come from America. He was in charge of Radha Damodar Party. He was in charge of New York. He was in charge of Life Membership in America. So he had a lot of responsibilities. But when he arrived, he had booked in to become the secretary for 1 month. When he arrived that evening, we sat and had a chat. I was asking, how are things going on in America? And he just said, oh, you know, everything's going on. Adi Kashyapa's in, you know, running New York. Trista Jumya's running the Radha Damodar. You know, all the things that he was in charge of, he delegated to other people. And he told me, he said, I really don't want to go back. I want to resign as a GBC and just become Prabhupada's permanent secretary. I was surprised because, you know, Tamal was known as practically he was the leading preacher in the whole movement at that time. And you know, for him to withdraw from these things was kind of surprising. So he explained, he said, actually, he said, you know, for the last 8 years, he said, all I've done is go out and preach, because I always felt that that was more important and that was more pleasing to Srila Prabhupada. He said, so I've always done that, you know, for others. But he said, now, he said, I really feel like I need Prabhupada's personal association. So I'm going to ask the Prabhupada and the GBC to let me become his permanent secretary. And then he said, I don't care whether it's for a year or 10 years. I just want to stay with Prabhupada for as long as the time's left that he's on the planet. So he kind of expressed that in confidence. And I had this, you know, again, this flash that maybe this is, you know, Prabhupada's going to change his leela from preaching to Nirjana Bhajan, retirement. Because we'd read in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada says that, that when the spiritual master retires, he retires with a few of his senior disciples and he turns over the preaching, you know, to his followers. So I just had this sense that this is what was actually, you know, this was what was going to go on. So anyway, one morning after breakfast, he was looking out over the balcony rail across the fields of Mayapur, and he turned to me and said, actually, it does not matter if I die immediately. I've given the basis for everything, and now if they simply manage things nicely and follow the programs that I've begun, then everything will be successful. But then he added, but still I would like to finish this Bhagavatam. So comments Prabhupada was making were indicating, you know. So on February the 20th then, another 5 days later, at 8 a.m., Prabhupada set off to go to Mahesh Pandit Samadhi and Temple. So whilst we were there in Mayapur, this man turned up and he was the pujari for the Samadhi of Mahesh Pandit. Mahesh Pandit's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as one of the branches of the Chaitanya tree. Important place. So, that's a whole different topic. I mean, I can comment on that, but I'd like to finish at least this bit about, you know, Prabhupada's old age problems, if that's all right. I mean, I understand you've got services to do and everything. The other day we talked until about 9:20. What's my limit today, Swavas Prabhu? 8:30. All right, let me try and get through this, and if I have a couple of minutes, I'll comment on that question about going to the Gaudiya Mat. I'll give you one word answer. Did Prabhupada want us to go there? The answer is no, N-O, no, in big capitals. Now let me continue with this, and I'll try and come back to that. So Prabhupada went to this Mahesh Pandit Samadhi. This is just a, you know, individual temple. It wasn't part of any big organization or the Gaudiya Mat or anything. The man had just come and he wanted ISKCON to take the management up of the temple there. Because for him, then it would mean that he wouldn't have any worries for money or anything. I guess that was a motivation. But still, it's a holy spot. And Prabhupada was interested in the preservation, you know, of the pastime places of the associates of Lord Chaitanya. So Prabhupada agreed to go there. I wasn't very happy, actually, about it, and I went to Prabhupada afterwards and, you know, asked him, why do you have to go? You know, so many sannyasis are here, let them go. And then Prabhupada said, no, he's asked me, so I have to go. So then I said, but Prabhupada, every time, you know, when you go on these programs now, you just get sick. So then Prabhupada, he told me, he said, you know about Pradyumna, when he got wounded on the battlefield. Yeah. So his driver took him away. But then immediately when he became conscious again, he went straight back to the battle. So I said, yes, but I said it was his driver's duty to take him away when he was injured. And then Prabhupada said, yes, and it was his duty to immediately return. So we had this little exchange. And then again I came to him and I said, but Prabhupada, you know, why do you have to go? And I was really kind of, I was a bit disturbed by it, and I was complaining, actually. And I actually went over the boundary, guru-disciple boundary there at that point. I should have taken, you know, the first instruction that, you know, I mean, Prabhupada made it clear, I'm going, you know, but I pushed the point. And then when I complained about it again, Prabhupada just put his finger up like that, stop. Yeah, and then I realized that I'd gone too far. He'd made his mind up. There was no changing it. Prabhupada did sometimes, you know, when you were discussing programs and, you know, even, I mean, you know, practical management things, Prabhupada would often allow his disciples to raise counterpoints, you know, for discussion, just to train us up. But sometimes, you know, you had to be aware of the fact that Prabhupada was going to do something and that was it. You had to do it. Anyway, so off we went. We got there. We arrived. When we arrived, Prabhupada had darshan of Gornitai. Then he gave a lecture with a kirtan, and about 150 locals turned up for it. Afterwards, he had his massage and lunch, and then rested in a small room provided for the purpose. Brahmananda had arrived at this time. He was with us. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Jai Pataka Maharaj were there also. After resting, he talked with some of the local leaders, mainly condemning the philosophy of Yatamat Tatupat. Most Bengalis are infected with this idea and revere Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. But Prabhupada has taken the opportunity to preach against them as much as possible. In the afternoon, then, we were taken to a pandal in a nearby town. It was set up on an open grassy area, and in one corner there was a large covered stage. So there were some steep steps leading up the side of the stage to get onto the top. So Prabhupada mounted the steps, and what he did was he went up one at a time. Put one foot up, brought the other one up. Put one foot up, brought the other one up, like this. So then when he got to the top step, again, he was pushing with his cane, and again, it proved to be too much for him. But I was right behind him. I was on the step behind him with my hands out. And as he got on that top step, his legs suddenly gave away again, just as they had done at Sridhar Maharaj's mat. And again, I had to catch him and hold him. And then I just put him up onto the stage. And again, Prabhupada just carried on. He didn't say a word. Didn't look back. Sat down on his, you know, this asana that they provided. And then he had Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Jai Pataka Maharaj give lectures. So that was his general condition. Very weak. And of course, then at the end of February, then that was when Prabhupada became very seriously ill. He came out from his room. The devotees had just arrived, mainly from America and Europe. And I think it was like the first day of the official festival. And all the GBCs and sannyasis were waiting for Prabhupada to come out of his room. When Prabhupada came out, he didn't go on the morning walk, but when he came out to go down for the program, I was shocked, actually, to see how sick he looked. I don't know whether the other devotees really noticed it, because I did, because I was with him every day, so I could immediately see something seriously wrong here. But Prabhupada didn't say anything. All the devotees, Jai Srila Prabhupada, Hari Bol. Prabhupada just, you know, smiled and went down with them. And we went through the program. But when it came to giving the Bhagavatam class, Prabhupada couldn't speak. So he had, I think, Brahmananda or Jai Tirtha like that to give the class. Then at the end of it, then there was a big kirtan. And, of course, the tradition in Mayapur had become, you know, this wonderful parikrama event where Prabhupada, at the end of the program, he would come off the Vyasasana and then he would circumambulate Radha Madhava. Because in those days, we just had small Radha Madhava. And the temple room was the ground floor of the Lotus building. And Prabhupada would go around three times. And there were bells hanging on from the roof from either side. And Prabhupada would stop at the bells, grab the rope, and, you know, really ring them very vigorously. And all the devotees would just, you know, go wild. They were just jumping up and down. It was really ecstatic. So then this particular day, then the same thing. The devotees made way for Prabhupada, and they invited him to come around for his parikrama. I wanted to go forward and say, no, you know, Prabhupada's sick and he's going to have to go straight back up. But, you know, Prabhupada, he just immediately went forward. He didn't decline. And so he did his circumambulation. Again, it was very ecstatic. I could see Prabhupada was really, really sick. So then we took him in a chair back upstairs. As soon as he got into his room, then he went straight into the bedroom. He laid down. He said, now nobody should come. And for 6 days, practically, he was high fever. He just laid out sometimes on the bed. Sometimes he would just lay on the floor, you know, on the cotton mattresses. He just lay there in his room. And the only person that he actually called for was Swarup Damodar to talk about the science preaching, even though he didn't see anybody else, but he wanted to see him. So that was the situation. And really, Prabhupada never recovered from that illness. He did go to the Bombay Pandal a couple of weeks later. And, of course, he made that final trip to England at Janmashtami time. But they were really just, they were just for the pleasure of the devotees. It wasn't really for any preaching value as such. I think it was that the illness was just a culmination of many things. His kidneys were badly diseased. There was no question of that. And I think that led to a whole bunch of different complications just with his liver and, you know, heart. You know, you get palpitations, very high blood pressure, which, you know, causes so many problems. It was just really like it all culminated. And then just because he was old, he didn't have the physical strength left anymore. So his body just basically after that, you know, diminished and diminished. Brigo Prabhu. Well, the Pandal in 77, what Prabhupada started doing there was he had different devotees read from the Bhagavatam. He had Bhavananda get up one night and read the hogs, dogs, camels and asses verse out as the Pandal lecture and the purport. But then his intention was not to speak because he was really sick. Again, we had to carry him up onto the stage and carry him down from the stage. But when Prabhupada got on the stage and he saw all the people there, he got so fired up that he couldn't resist speaking. So then he would have somebody else speak, but then, you know, he would cut in at a certain point and he would speak himself. And he was speaking really, you know, strongly, giving them the source, as it were. So, you know, that was just Prabhupada's spiritual enthusiasm overtaking his bodily condition. Anyway, so there's a few examples. We have probably about 2 minutes left. So, okay. All right, no worries there then. Let me comment on this question about did Prabhupada want us to go to the Gaudiya Math? As I said, no. Prabhupada said that we should be respectful in our dealings with them, but we should keep them at a distance. He said, because actually they're only competent to disrupt our preaching, that's all. And we've seen that over the years. So many times somebody becomes a so-called friend of ISKCON, you know, and then the next thing you know, they're reinitiating people or they're, you know, putting poison in their ear. ISKCON's this, the ISKCON leaders are that. Come with me, you know, I'm a Maha Bhagwat, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the end result is that Prabhupada's movement becomes weakened and the devotees become disturbed unnecessarily. And they end up becoming blasphemous even. So Prabhupada knew very well the capacity of his God brothers. He had his own vision, you know, that he'd gotten from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur about how the preaching should be conducted. And it was different. There was a different mood and there was a different methodology in some respects, you know, than his God brothers. And Prabhupada knew that none of them, he told me personally, he said none of them were competent to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. He said, he did tell me once that, you know, I asked him when Tirtha Maharaj had died. And of course, it was well known what Prabhupada thought about Tirtha Maharaj. He didn't get along with him at all. And I asked Prabhupada one day, you know, actually, were there any of your God brothers that were actually qualified? Prabhupada said, oh, yes. So, you know, people like Keshava Maharaj, that were close friends with, you know, Prabhupada, he respected them very much. But, say, like Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada was very close with him. They were very good friends for a long, long time. But at the same time, Prabhupada didn't hesitate to put in writing what the defect was in his understanding of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's instructions for spreading Krishna consciousness. So even those that he was close with, he knew they had their limitations, and he knew that they weren't competent to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Prabhupada had that vision. So he didn't want that to be interfered with, and he didn't want his disciples to become deviated from the program that he had set. So we, you know, that's the mood, is that be respectful, but stay in your own camp. It sounds sectarian, but it's not. You know, it's a transcendental arrangement, actually. He knew what they'd done and what they hadn't done. And he was determined that we should not make the same mistakes. Is that all right? All right, let's go on a little bit about Prabhupada's health. So, of course, Prabhupada was maintaining his health as best he could. I said the other day that he spent minimum 3 to 3.5 hours a day simply looking after his body. You know, an hour's morning walk, an hour and a half noontime massage, and another hour, you know, half an hour in the evening massage. So the massages were very important. And then July the 10th, 1976, when Prabhupada was in New York, he explained the benefit of massage. So in the course of his class, which continued with the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majalila 20-104, Prabhupada mentioned the purpose and benefit of bodily massage. Tridhatuke. So this body is made, according to the Ayurvedic knowledge, it is a bodily development of three dhatus, kapha, pitta, and vayu. Vayu is there, air. So it is very scientific. So when we are eating, it becomes secretion. Then by vayu, when there is less ventilation in old age, so the vayu becomes slow. That means the air becomes slow. So therefore, so many diseases overcome. So this massaging means just to help the air within the body to ventilate. So it is actually made of kapha, pitta, and vayu. The vayu is making the secretion dried up, and so on and so on. So we are not this kapha, pitta, and vayu. We are not this skin, bone, blood, or whatever it may be. You can analyze it. But I am not this. The life is not there. So, mucus, that's an old age problem. You get clogged up all the time because the blood gets thin. Therefore, Prabhupada said in France, don't let me get cold. Otherwise, this mucus will come and it will cause so many difficulties. And heart failure, if it gets too much. So, massage, you get the airs in the body moving. The air dries up the mucus and that keeps you fit. But Prabhupada knew all these. Of course, he was, you know, in the medical field previously. He knew all these different things. So Prabhupada was, you know, taking also an evening massage. That was mainly because his joints, his left hip used to get numb sometimes. Because he spent a lot of his time just sitting down in his room, cross-legged, talking with, you know, different people and managing and whatever. So that evening massage also was very important. Keep the circulation going, stop the joints from getting stiff. And there was a couple of special massages that Prabhupada got once or twice when I was with him. Because when I took up giving Prabhupada his massage, I didn't know a single thing about massage. Nothing. All I got was 2 minutes instruction from Upendra. Just rub up and down, you know. Press the muscles, that's it. And that's what I was doing, basically. I was just kind of speculating. And, you know, I tried to figure out what it would be like if I was receiving a massage and then give Prabhupada that. And he liked it. So, you know, he never said learn this or learn that. As long as you could give him a good, strong massage, as hard as you could massage him, the more he liked it. So it was, you know, it was a real workout, an hour and a half. You really were, you know, pressing and rubbing. Very, Prabhupada loved it, you know. So, in fact, in the last 6 weeks in Vrindavan, in 77, October, November, Prabhupada was sitting up one day on the bed, and he wanted somebody to scratch his back. So Kirtananda Maharaj was there, so he started just gently, you know, rubbing his fingers up and down. Prabhupada said, harder. So he said, harder. He did it. He said, harder, like this. And Kirtananda said, if I scratch you anymore, I'm going to cut all the skin off your back. You know, Prabhupada just liked it hard, you know. Anyway, so there were a couple of times when he got a special massage. One was when we were in New Vrindavan, and this was June 24th, 76. And Prabhupada had, you know, he was getting toothache problems. He was having heart palpitation, kidney problem like this. So at noon, Kirtananda Maharaj sent Gajendra Das to administer a special massage to Prabhupada's feet and hands while I continued with his standard massage. So I was going on doing my thing, and then Ganendra came and he started, you know, doing this acupressure. So the method consisted of pressing the nerve points in the hands and feet. Supposedly, this is to stimulate the internal bodily organs. Prabhupada remarked that it was painful, but he allowed him to continue. Then the next day, Prabhupada didn't go on his morning walk, and although he did attend the temple and give class. So at 11:30, Ganendra Prabhu came and massaged Prabhupada's hands and feet again. Prabhupada decided that this would be the last time. He smilingly told him that the treatment was more painful than the disease. So he really didn't like that acupressure at all. Now then, there was another gentleman that came that gave Prabhupada this really excellent massage. His name was Dr. Singha Ghosh. And he had somehow or another got an association with Mahamsa Swami. He was very favorable to the devotees. And he had a physiotherapy health center at Kodaikanal. Kodaikanal is in the south from Hyderabad, a couple of hours. Very beautiful hill station area. And when Prabhupada was in Hyderabad in August to open up the temple there, Dr. Singha Ghosh had been introduced to him. And he had noted Prabhupada's condition. He had this endemia, this swelling of his hands and legs. And he also said, this is a kidney problem. So he offered, he said, next time when you come, I will personally come and treat you. So sure enough, we went down there on December 2nd. And then on the 3rd of December, in Hyderabad, in the city temple, at about 11 a.m., Dr. Singha Ghosh arrived from Kodaikanal. He is a celebrated physiotherapist and expert at massage. He was Jawaharlal Nehru's physician, and he treats the whole Nehru family, including the Prime Minister, Indira Gandhi. So he's a big man, very important. He was informed by Mahamsa Swami that Prabhupada is ill, and he's come to give Prabhupada some treatment. After examining him, he explained that the swelling is due to the malfunction of Prabhupada's left kidney, corroborating the diagnosis that Prabhupada has received in New York in July from Dr. Bhagat. Dr. Ghosh gave Prabhupada a special kind of massage to help dissipate the fluid. His touch was efficacious and produced immediate relief. Prabhupada liked his treatment, and he told me to learn some of his techniques. So then 4 days later, we went out, or a couple of days later, we went out to the farm. And then Dr. Ghosh started coming out for about a week every morning. So he arrived on about 10:30 a.m. He's going to stay in the Hyderabad area for about a week and will visit Prabhupada every morning to massage him by physiotherapy and try to reduce the swelling in his legs. Prabhupada sat out in the clear sunny air, and Dr. Ghosh, full of enthusiasm and life, massaged him for over an hour using a special vibrating massage technique that he told us he had personally devised for maximum benefit to his patients. He was about, I think he was probably in his late 50s at that time. So as he moved his hands along Prabhupada's limbs and torso, he shook them with what he claimed was 40 vibrations a second. I couldn't see how he could count that fast, but he certainly put a lot of effort into it. He had me prepare hot steam towels, which he used to massage Prabhupada's joints. I wasn't sure what to make of the treatment. It seemed to be too elaborate to be practical for me to implement. But Prabhupada was sure. He was very glad, and afterwards he told me that as soon as Dr. Ghosh had touched him, he felt relief. So this went on for some days. December the 8th, Prabhupada's comment to Dr. Chandra. Now, he sent a comment. This man had written to Prabhupada. He was saying, I'm a retired doctor. I'd like to live in your ashram, and I can treat the devotees. I'd like to treat the bodies of the devotees. So Prabhupada had written back saying, yes, this is very good. To treat the bodies of the devotees is a great service. So Prabhupada's comment to Dr. Chandra that treating the bodies of the devotees is a great service highlights all the more the valuable service that Dr. Singha Ghosh is rendering by treating Srila Prabhupada's body. He came again this morning and again spent over an hour treating his divine grace with his special vibration technique and the hot towels. Although he is encouraging me to learn from Dr. Ghosh, I'm pretty certain that Srila Prabhupada will not want such elaborate arrangements to be made on a daily basis once Dr. Ghosh has gone. It takes quite a bit of preparation to set up the towels and have them hot just at the right time during the massage. But there's no doubt that Dr. Ghosh's touch is proving to be efficacious. Prabhupada is very pleased with his service. So then on December the 11th then, that was the final day's treatment. Unfortunately, he's a busy man and he could only give these few days. He took his leave this morning, highly gratified at being able to serve Srila Prabhupada. With sincere devotion, he grasped Prabhupada's lotus feet with both hands and raised them and put them on his head. Prabhupada was lying just like this. He put them on the top of his head like this. Placing them firmly on his balding pate, he joyfully announced, now let me leave this body. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Prabhupada humbly accepted his acclamations and was equally gratified by his expert service, which has given him some relief, at least temporarily. He thanked the doctor with smiles and promised him that he would come and stay at his health farm in Kodaikanal in the Palni Hills of Tamil Nadu as soon as the opportunity presents itself. So December the 12th, then it was back to, you know, mundane me. So I decided to try out Dr. Ghosh's vibrating technique myself today. Srila Prabhupada sat out on his straw mat on the veranda, and I commenced. I confess that I wasn't convinced about the method when I saw the doctor do it, even though Prabhupada said, you know, he liked it. Dr. Ghosh is a bit of a larger-than-life character, and always jubilant and positive, and his technique seems to be more of a show than anything else. How can anybody possibly figure out how many times a second he's vibrating his hands? But still, Prabhupada liked it, so I thought I'd try it. When I saw Dr. Ghosh do it, it looked easy. But when I grasped Prabhupada's arms and then his legs, it was far from being a breeze. I had to concentrate all my energy to keep my hands vibrating as I moved up and down Prabhupada's limbs, kneading and pressing his muscles. I didn't do the hot towel compress on his joints, though. It seemed to be too much endeavor, and Prabhupada never mentioned it either. Nor did he comment on my using the vibrating technique. He simply sat silently, his eyes closed much of the time, allowing me to put his body through its daily workout. After an hour and a half, I stopped and finished by offering my obeisances. I got a shock. Energized and aglow, Prabhupada seemed to practically spring to his feet when he got up to take his bath. Although he had made no comment, my massage seemed to have somehow or another vitalized him in a way that I had never succeeded before. I was very happy and surprised and a lot more respectful about Dr. Ghosh's massage technique. And I was also completely wiped out. It took a tremendous amount of effort, and it was almost as if my own energy had flown through my hands into Srila Prabhupada's body. I felt spent, while Srila Prabhupada seemed to be invigorated. So then the next day, December the 13th, I was unable to repeat Dr. Ghosh's vibration technique for Prabhupada's massage today. It's simply too strenuous. Instead, I reverted back to my usual standard, and Prabhupada didn't say anything. He didn't give any hint that I should use Dr. Ghosh's method, nor did he show any sign that he was dissatisfied with my regular rendering. So I don't feel too guilty, even though I saw that the effects of the vibrating method were very potent. So that's a couple of things. I guess we have to finish. It's quarter to nine. A little bit more. We didn't get to the section about Prabhupada's comments on the devotee's health. Maybe next time I come to New Dwarka. Next year, maybe. We'll continue on. Any other final question or comment? Dravida Prabhu. Yes. Yes, the diaries are caught. It's a diary, so it's chronological. That means things are scattered all over. So for this seminar, the Living Bhagavatam, what I did was I took different themes. So this is a thematic rather than a chronological approach. So, you know, health. So you get, and then I try to categorize it, you know, different sections. So it's mixed up, but it has a sense of its own. Eventually what I'd like to do is to put the seminars out in small books, so then it'll be very easy, you know, if somebody wants to know on a particular topic, you know, what Prabhupada said or did, then it'll be all there in one book. I will say also that this is not meant to be a complete presentation of everything on that topic. You know, if you wanted to do that, you'd end up with Bhagavatam-sized books about each topic, you know. But this is meant to be a synopsis. It's to give a glimpse, you know, what was happening on different topics. And it's practically all the material is, you know, from my own experience and from my own observations. I have on occasion included a few little snippets, you know, from previous years. That, you know, were relevant to the particular topic, but mainly it's my own stuff. Any other? Last one, Brigham. In a nutshell, what was Prabhupada's advice to the devotees as far as their own health goes? Pleasure is a misconception. That was his nutshell advice. Pleasure is a misconception. Rudrani Dasi, who just left her body last year, she received a letter. Actually, I was going to read that out, but maybe, have we got time? Just 1 minute. All right, let's just have a look at that. Let me just find this. Brigu's question was, in a nutshell, what was Prabhupada's advice to the devotees about their own health and maintaining their own health? Let me just find this. I will say that Prabhupada, you know, he said there's three things. It's well known. Fire, disease, and death. You must attend to them immediately. Otherwise, they'll devastate everything. So Prabhupada didn't approve of his devotees ignoring, you know, their own health. He wanted us to look after our bodies because they're gifts from Krishna, and we have to use them in our service. And if you don't have a healthy body, then you can't do your service properly. So he didn't like it when devotees were neglectful of their health. There were several examples, you know, that I have, but we won't be able to read them today. But I'll give a couple where these are devotees who had chronic illness. So there's a difference between that and just, you know, some occasional illness that comes. Chronic means long-standing and practically untreatable. And Prabhupada's advice, this was from a letter, October the 23rd, 1976. Balakrishna, who was the temple president in Seattle at that time, he had sent a report, and then he asked for some advice. One of his best distributors, Rudrani Dasi, although only 23 years old, is so badly stricken with arthritis that she can barely sit, walk, or even sleep. Despite this, when she is able to go out and book distribution, she sells twice as many books as anybody else. She has a strong desire to continue with the service, but no doctor has been able to help her. She's currently taking 25 aspirins a day just to be able to function. Balakrishna expressed his reluctance to bother Srila Prabhupada, but due to frustration with any other solution, he now asked whether Prabhupada could recommend any Ayurvedic doctor or medicine, or should she just accept her karma and go on serving as best she can until she dies. Srila Prabhupada was as philosophical about her problem as he is about his own health. He offered no other panacea than that given by Krishna himself. His advice came right out of the Bhagavad Gita 2.14 and 81 years of experience. The girl who has got health problems must learn to be tolerant. As long as the material body will be there, there will only be pain. Pleasure is a misconception. You can put that on a bumper sticker and sell it. You know. Pleasure is a misconception. Then 3 days later, there was another letter. 2 days later, there was a letter from Krishna Vilasini Dasi, who used to be here in L.A. Do you, what's her fate? What happened to her? Krishna Vilasini. Okay. So she's still alive. This, yeah, no, that's a different one. All right. Anyway, so on the 25th of October, there was a poignant letter from Krishna Vilasini Dasi in Los Angeles. She explained that she has a debilitating muscular disorder, which over the last 2 years has practically incapacitated her. She can barely talk and has almost lost the use of her arms and legs. Reading is very difficult, but I force the issue because I'm afraid that I may not finish your books before I die. Lamenting that she's unable to do even the simplest service, she wrote, I'm humbly asking if there is any way at all to regain even enough health to be able to sit and engage in some simple service. If it is my destiny to live a long time in this condition, I am begging and crying that you will mercifully benedict me with spiritual strength to remain always at your lotus feet. Prabhupada was touched by her plea, but he again offered the same practical advice and philosophical perspective that he had given for Rudrani Dasi from Seattle 2 days ago. As long as the body will be there, he replied, there will only be pain. Pleasure is only a misconception. Do not be sorry if you are in an unfortunate situation. It can also be fortunate if you take advantage by becoming serious to become Krishna conscious. Follow the regulative principles, chant 16 rounds as far as possible, render service, and study my books. Success is sure. So there is a point when you get to that point. You do everything you can, nothing helps anymore. You just have to use the situation, become fortunate to become Krishna conscious, that's all. And understand the material body is not meant for pleasure. So, is that all right? All right, we have to finish. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I have to.